Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'd like to greet our new affiliate, WMQM AM 1600 in Memphis, Tennessee. That's a 50,000-watt station that's going to be bringing Mark Dankos, America, and the Republic Broadcasting Network to a much wider audience in the American South. At the same time, we're expanding our international shortwave outreach, and I'm informed by our text this morning that we're real close to having our archives restored. When that happens, I will let you know, and that will be a user-friendly system, not simply for those who browse the Republic Broadcasting Network site for past shows and topics and guests, but it will also be more user-friendly for the hosts who will be able on a regular basis to update their own archives and add daily show descriptions with URL links to articles and websites of guests in a way that will make this a much better system than anything we've ever had before. When that process is completed, I will let you know. I'm looking forward to it because of the quality of the guests that we routinely get on the various shows in this network. It's important that these shows be preserved for later listeners so that we can expand our outreach to those who would like to listen to these shows but are not necessarily available at the particular time that they air live. Today we have a very special guest, Gary Brummett. He is a survivor of Israel's attack on the USS Liberty on June the 8th, 1967. I tried to read in the first hour of the show Eric Margolis's piece for the Toronto Sun from May the 2nd, 2001, in regard to the USS Liberty and Israel's role in attacking it deliberately, in Mr. Margolis's judgment. It happens to be my judgment as well. That Margolis piece, again, can be found at lewrockwell.com by searching the archives there. It's entitled The USS Liberty, America's Most Shameful Secret. And today we have a man who was there and who suffered at the time, and like many of the survivors of that dreadful day, has been undertaking a very valiant fight in the last 40 years to ensure that the American public receives over time the real truth of what happened that day, and what the truth of what happened that day has to say to us today in regard to the ongoing, continued control of Zionist political interests in the American news media, as well as the American government, and what it may mean for a wider war today, 40 years later, in the Middle East, that will more directly involve the United States. Gary Brummett, how are you, sir?
I'm just fine this morning. How are you doing? First off, I'd like to thank you, Mark, and Republic Broadcasting Network for having me on, allowing me to speak about the USS Liberty, about the attack and cover-up. I realize this is a two-hour program. I've done a number of two-hour programs in the past. That's a long time, but in 2 hours, we can only scratch the surface of what happened. Hopefully, if it's a possible, you'll have other Liberty survivors on, such as a research officer and people like that, that are more than willing to be on your program. And thank you for this chance.
Well, just for openers, and I know we're going to take a commercial break here in just a couple of minutes, Gary, and then have a longer period of time for conversation, but just to acquaint you with me, I had always considered myself, from the time I was a very young person, to be an informed person. At the time of the events in the Six-Day War in 1967, I was only 12 years old, was still living in Hawaii, but getting ready to be transferred with my Air Force father and mother from Hawaii to Dayton, Ohio, and Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and was about 15 days after these dreadful things happened to you and the other crew members of the USS Liberty. I was setting sail on the SS Luralene, going from Honolulu to San Francisco to begin a new life back in the mainland United States with my dad in the Air Force. And when we come back, I wanted to mention something specific that I recall from that time and what the implications are for the remainder of this show and our conversation with you today. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio on RBM. We'll be back with Gary Brummett and a discussion of the USS Liberty. Stay tuned.
imagine a firefly, simple and innocent, the ability to light the night sky. The ozone layer, unseen by the naked eye, life-sustaining. Our ocean, primordial soup, breathes life. Bring the wonders of nature home.
Soleil salt lamps, handcrafted from million-year-old crystal salt, will gently ionize and purify your indoor air, helping you breathe easier. Nourish your mind and body with soothing colors for deep relaxation, and neutralize EMF radiation, protecting your family's health.
Visit SOLAYWellness.com for powerful, simple, life-sustaining Soleil wellness products created from nature in harmony with nature.
Hi, I'm Isabella, founder of Soleil Wellness. Visit us or call 866-497-0274, 866-497-0274.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Mark Dancos America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Gary Brummett. He is a survivor of Israel's attack on the USS Liberty on June the 8th, 1967. I was getting ready to say to Gary before the break, at the time I was 12 years old and was still living in Hawaii. I was about 2 weeks away from being shipped out of Hawaii to go back to the mainland of the United States to be a part of a Air Force community at, in Dayton, Ohio, at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. But at the time, Gary, I was following the conventional media reports on the Six-Day War. In those days, frankly, not knowing any better, like most Americans, I was pro-Israel based upon what I was hearing and reading in the American media and press. And like most people, thought that the right side was winning that conflict. I had no historical understanding of it whatsoever. And in terms of the USS Liberty, I saw no reference made to that incident whatsoever at the time. And years later, it was either in the late 1980s or the very early 1990s, reading the anti-Zionist Lutheran Christian News, there was an extended article on what happened to you and to others on June the 8th, 1967. That was really the first exposure I had to some of the basic data surrounding this tragedy. What does that say about our own government and our own news media?
It doesn't say a whole lot, to be honest with you. One of my fellow crewmen, Jim Ennis, wrote a book, Assault on the Liberty. It came out in 1980, and Jim, when he first started out at trying to sell his books, he had roadblocks put in front of him, and you could put a copy of his book, Assault on the Liberty, in a library, and it would be removed. Every type of roadblock that could be thrown out there in front of us has been thrown out there. And this is still going on today, and it will be 40 years this June 8th that that happened. I was a 20-year-old third-class petty officer on board the Liberty at the time, and I'm currently 60 years old. And the cover-up is, they done a real good job on us back then because we're still fighting to try and get the truth out. And it doesn't seem to matter how much information we put on the table, how many people come forward that were past government officials, past naval officials, and testify, sign sworn affidavits as to what really happened. Our government just does not, they have just adamantly refused to recognize the truth and tell the truth in this incident. And I think that there in 1967, in the early 60s, our Middle East policy started going haywire. And after the Six-Day War, it's been on a fast track from that day to this, and I think that's what's got us over there in the Middle East right now, in Afghanistan and Iraq, is my personal opinion.
Yeah, I happen to agree with that. And Michael Collins Piper, who has written a book, Final Judgment, I don't know if you've had an opportunity to look at it, but Michael makes an incredible case for a direct role on the part of the Israeli Mossad and David Ben-Gurion in the assassination of JFK, related to what Michael Collins Piper believes is the Israel's attempt at that time to keep their atomic program at Dimona from being under any sort of media or international scrutiny, and that they wanted to remove Kennedy, who was insisting that their program be under some type of reevaluation and public analysis. Also, Piper makes the point that between the Kennedy administration and the Johnson, that there was a sea change in terms of America's Middle Eastern foreign policy, and it became decidedly more pro-Israel and pro-Zionist in the changeover from Kennedy to Johnson. So that's, you know, who knows about all of that, but it's certainly suggestive when you read Eric Margolis's piece from May of 2001 in the Toronto Sun, where he indicates that Lyndon Johnson and Robert McNamara, beyond a shadow of a doubt, played a direct role in covering this thing up.
Well, you know, I want to get back to what you said about Piper. I've heard of him. I've heard of the book. I've not read it. But from other sources that I have and friends that I have, that some are retired out of government service from different walks of life. They did different things, be it the CIA or what have you. I have to agree with you. Up during the Kennedy administration, John Kennedy, like Eisenhower before him, he wanted a nuclear-free Middle East. He wanted to try and treat the people in that region in a fair, even-handed manner. Now, 2 weeks prior to John Kennedy's death, he had signed an executive order to bring our 16,000 troops out of South Vietnam. I have often wondered if there was not a connection here between his assassination and his going to stop the Vietnam War, which 8 or 9 months later, Lyndon Johnson got us bogged down in it. I've wondered, is there not a connection between the Kennedy assassination, the attack on the Liberty, the cover-up? Is there not a thread here between these two ventures? Now, I had an individual, I will not name him. I was sitting in his home last January, and I went down to see him to pick up a note that he had been given or sent to him by Robert McNamara. I felt it important enough to fly from Louisiana to Florida to retrieve it, which I do have it. We made copies of it. And while we're sitting at his home, he asked me and the other younger Liberty survivor, there was another gentleman with us, an older man, He said, do you boys know why we went into Vietnam? And this was his take on it. And I said, well, Brown and Root was pretty well Johnson's money people. And they stood to make hundreds of millions of dollars if we went to war. He said, well, that's part of the truth. He says, but Israel wanted us bogged down there so we would take our eyes off of them in the Middle East and they could pursue their nuclear ambitions at that Dimona there in the Negev Desert. And that dovetails with what you just said.
Yes, and it does seem to me that when you start looking at these different things, that there seems to be a thread or a seamless garment involved in all of this. I think the other thing that comes to mind as well is information that's crossed my way from responsible public sources in the non-mainstream media who have emphasized that John Kennedy also signed an executive order that would have gotten rid of the Federal Reserve Board and returned monetary policy to the U.S. Congress again.
Well, so also, Kennedy had made the statement. He was not keen on the CIA. He said, I will break it into 1,000 pieces, was his words. And, of course, the Vietnam War, the CIA was extremely instrumental, I think, in getting us into that. That and these other forces that are at work from that day to this day, in this, from then to now in this country, which is extremely troubling. The American public does not see this.
Yeah, especially as it appears that we are continuing to embark on adventures in the Middle East that may lead into an apocalypse the likes of which has never been seen before in human history.
Well,
go ahead.
I would like to ask a question on the air because it's something I don't hear your major medias. I hear no one ask this question. All the Muslim world has come to hate us extremely. Why is this? What has caused these people to hate us so? Used to be they wanted our technology. They wanted us to come develop their oil fields, things of this nature. Perhaps they didn't like our lifestyle, but we tolerated one another. And what has caused this ungodly hate? And as I've said many times on many programs, it's a very failed, flawed Middle East policy that has been embraced, encouraged, and enlarged ever since Lyndon Johnson was president. And there's something drastically wrong with it that needs to be changed. You know, when our ship was attacked, we were a signal intelligence vessel. We were called up from Abidjan on the Ivory Coast. We steam flanked for 8 days to get the road to Spain. Then we made a fast transit of the Med. Took us another 5 days. The day we get on station, we get hit. The point I'm trying to bring out here, 2 weeks prior to the attack, we were in transit trying to get there. Was there elements in our government knew that there was going to be a war? I strongly think there is. Was the Liberty going to be set up as another Tonkin Gulf? I kind of think maybe that's a possibility. If the Liberty had been sank, all hands had been killed, who do you think would have been blamed for this? The Arabs would have been blamed for it. Israel was supposed to have been our ally. And how do you think that the American people would have viewed that region of the world had they thought that they sank an American ship and killed 294 men? There wouldn't have been a real lot of love and friendship between us and them. And you can go back to the Laban affair where the Israeli agents blew up the hotel, killed some British and American nationals, tried to blame it on the Arabs, but they were caught and executed for this. It's a false flag operation, I guess, would be one way to term it.
Yes, and I remember, going back to a period of time not too long before 9/11. I was living in Philadelphia at the time and trying to finish a graduate thesis in theology, and I came upon Gordon Thomas's book for St. Martin's Press, Gideon Spies, The Secret History of the Israeli Mossad. And, of course, Gordon's book had been out for quite a while by that time. I was getting in on it late. Bought a good hardback edition in a sale bin and started reading about all kinds of things that related to precisely that, false flag incidents. We'll be back with Gary Brummett. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
are you preparing ahead for the events in the future? In the near future, we know there will be those of us that will not be able to buy or sell. Stoves and More wants to help give you the freedom from the systems of the world and from skyrocketing fuel prices. Stoves and More is a dealer for all Amish-built wood cook stoves that will give you an independence you need to cook and bake your food, dry fruits and vegetables, heat your whole house water system, and heat your home. These state-of-the-art cook stoves are nothing like grandma's old stoves. They have large, airtight, efficient fireboxes that give you an all-night burn, easily heating up to 2,000 square feet. Whether or not you're off the grid, we have products for you from stoves to Staber washers and 12 and 24 volt refrigeration. At Stoves and More, we have the perfect products to complete your preparations. To the first 10 people who purchase a stove, we'll send a free copy of our newly released DVD, Getting Started with Wood Cook Stoves. Stoves and More offers the best selection at the lowest prices on the web, so visit us at www.stovesandmoreonline.com. That website again, stovesandmoreonline.com.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow. I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017, or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
Imagine a firefly, simple and innocent, the ability to light the night sky. The ozone layer, unseen by the naked eye, life-sustaining. Our ocean, primordial soup, breathes life. Bring the wonders of nature home.
Sole Salt Lands, handcrafted from million-year-old crystal salt, will gently ionize and purify your indoor air, helping you breathe easier. Nourish your mind and body with soothing colors for deep relaxation, and neutralize EMF radiation, protecting your family's health.
Visit SOLAYWellness.com for powerful, simple, life-sustaining Sole Wellness products created from nature in harmony with nature.
Hi, I'm Isabella, founder of Sole Wellness. Visit us or call 866-497-0274, 866-497-0274.
Back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Gary Brummett. Gary is a survivor of the attack on the part of Israel on the USS Liberty on June the 8th, 1967. Gary, looking at Eric Margolis's post from 2001 on that fateful day, he says that it was the fourth day of the 67 Arab-Israeli war where this attack occurred. Of course, that was June 8th, which would mean, I guess, that the six-day war, for purposes of historical clarification, apparently began on June 5th. Now, the USS Liberty you were mentioning departed the Ivory Coast well before that. Do you remember about what the exact date was when you left the Ivory Coast?
That would have been May 23rd or 24th. It took us 8 days of flank steaming to go up the west coast of Africa there, because Africa's got kind of always called it the hump. The Ivory Coast is below the hump there, and it took us 8 days of flank steaming to get to Rota. Seems like we got there during midday on the 1st. We took on ship stores and about 360 or 70,000 gallons of fuel oil and departed the next day, headed to the Middle East. And we got over there and got basically on station around midnight. the morning of the 8th, and shortly after daylight, the Liberty started being reconned by what was Israeli planes, and there were 10 or 12 recon flights over us. I mean, now they say they didn't know who we were, but by their own admission, through the use of Jane's Fighting Ships, which is a British publication, they had identified the USS Liberty and had them, and they had it placed in there on their war room charts at 10:55 a.m. Tel Aviv time, but 3 hours later is when the attack started. And this attack only stopped after we got out a distress message that we were under attack by unknown attackers. Israel said that after the word got out and we got a bogus open-air frequency came back to us, help us on the way, because American jets were only 15 minutes away. But these planes didn't make it to us. Had they made it to us, the torpedo attack would have stopped, and that would not have killed 25 men and destroyed the vessel as it was. But it ended up, it did save the rest of us, I guess you would say. But Israel immediately, the cover-up began at that point, and they said, well, they thought that the Liberty was an El-Kassar. Well, there's some bad problems with that. The Liberty was 455 feet long. We were 195 feet longer than the El-Kassar, and the El-Kassar was an old Egyptian horse carrier that was sitting waiting to be scrapped, and here's the real killer of all this. It was 8,000 tons, over 8,000 tons lighter than we were. That's 16 million pounds. That's a pretty good little difference, I would think, and they say they thought it was an Egyptian ship. If they thought it was an Egyptian ship, why were they jamming U.S. naval frequencies? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but why do you jam English or U.S. naval frequencies if you thought it was an Egyptian vessel?
Yeah, exactly. And I noticed last night doing just a little bit of preliminary research on this before our conversation today, I came across an article at the whatreallyhappened.com website entitled The U.S. Liberty Cover-Up, and emphasizing that I am not a military aviator, I am not a military intelligence analyst of any type or kind, and never have been. But as I look at the posted pictures there of the El-Kassar on the one hand that you cite this morning, and then the USS Liberty, it doesn't take a real genius to look at these pictures as a layperson like I am in these matters and to say there's no way that they could have mistaken the one vessel for the other. I mean, there is pictorially such a complete...
it would be like comparing a fishing boat to a yacht, fishing boat.
Exactly, and looking at this, I'm thinking, holy smoke, there is no way that any reasonable person looking at these pictures side by side in conjunction with your explanation this morning, Gary, who could possibly believe that these Israeli aviators made a mistake and that the Israeli intelligence community could have made a mistake of this type. It's impossible.
Well, I mean, there wasn't a flag flying. In fact, there were three flags that day on the ship that flew from the main mast. The first one was shot and burnt away. It was replaced by another flag the same size, which I think was a 5x7. It was later taken down, and this flag was recently donated to the Cold War Veterans Association by a fellow crewman from Arizona who had had it all these years, and nobody knew who had it. And then the holiday ensign, which is there at the Navy, a little site at Fort Meade in Maryland, a little Liberty display, it's on display there. The holiday ensign, which was 7 by 13 feet, was put up in its place. The U.S. Liberty on the port and starboard side, on the front of the ship, or the bow, it had the letters GTR. These letters were 5 feet tall in white paint against a gray background, and the letter 5 was 10 to 12 feet tall, and across the stern of...
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. because you can handle the truth.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Learn about the new discoveries of MSP Research. Find out about the success MDs, dentists, veterinarians, and others are having with Silver 500. Learn secrets to survival, how to detox the liver, gallbladder, and kidneys, and how over 1,100 doctors are treating Lyme disease, hepatitis C, diabetes, respiratory infections, and many more with success thanks to the help of MSP Research and Silver 500. Microbiologists have tested our mild silver protein and found Silver 500 to be the most effective treatment for B. subtilis, a subgroup of anthrax. Choose the products in your medical supply wisely. Our doctor's manual has grown to over 600 pages. Give us a call at 1-334-493-0420. That's 1-334-493-0420. And see why doctors in five countries use a dozen products that are manufactured by Dr. Bill McFarland. One more time, that's 1-334-493-0420. Or visit our website at www.mildsilverprotein.com/home.html.
Hi, Michelle. I haven't seen you on the bus for a while. Did they change your shift?
No, Lori. I finally quit my job. I'm working at home now, and I love it. No more commuting. And I'm home when the kids get out of school.
Working at home? Doing what?
It's a long story. It all started when I discovered the website earnmoneyathome123.com.
Oh, Michelle, you didn't fall for one of those internet deals, did you?
Well, I looked into several, and this one is for real.
Are you sure?
I didn't quit my job until I was sure, and now I'm making way more money working at home.
Really?
I've joined the Success Team and their major advertising co-op. Our business is fully automated, which gives me more money and the time to enjoy it. I'll be earning money while we're skiing this winter.
What was that website again?
EarnMoneyAtHome123.com. Here, write it down.
Good idea. EarnMoneyAtHome123.com. Maybe we can go skiing this winter, too.
EarnMoneyAtHome123.com is a global opportunity.
Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Gary Brummett, who is a survivor of Israel's attack on the USS Liberty on June the 8th, 1967. There are a couple of articles online that I've mentioned on the air in the first hour of the show that are well worth looking at in conjunction with our conversation with Gary today. One is Eric Margolis' piece for the Toronto Sun in May of 2001, entitled The USS Liberty, America's Most Shameful Secret, and also the Washington Report on Middle Eastern Affairs has a 1993 post entitled The Assault on the USS Liberty Still Covered Up After 26 Years. And that particular post is given to us by the very person that Gary was mentioning at the beginning of the show, James M. Ennis, Jr., who was a lieutenant on the deck of the USS Liberty that day, June 8, 1967, when this attack happened. And apparently Mr. Ennis has written a book, which Gary made reference to, that was published in 1980 by Random House, talking about this entire situation. It's entitled Assault on the Liberty, Random House, 1980. It was later deemed a notable naval book selection of the U.S. Naval Institute and was the editor's choice when it was reviewed in the Washington Post at the time. So all of that is good background reading that helps to supplement the eyewitness accounts of Gary Brummett today in regard to what happened on June the 8th, 1967, and what happened thereafter. Just wanted to mention before we get back in re-engaging with conversation with Gary that my technician informs me that Drudge has a very interesting report today on British forces being held by Iran. There are crew members, 15 British sailors and Marines, who are being held by Iranian forces. These British sailors and Marines, according to this report, were from the HMS Cornwall. And according to this report, these forces, who were from the Type 22 frigate, the HMS Cornwall, are believed to have been seized in the Shatt al-Arab waterway, which is at the entrance to the Persian Gulf, for those of you not familiar with that geographic reference. The Royal Navy are insistent that they were operating in Iraqi waters and not Iranian territory. Ministry of Defense spokesman said, quote, "We are pursuing this matter urgently with the Iranian authorities at the highest level," unquote. Keep an eye on that story, because we've been looking for some time at this network for some sort of incident, false flag or otherwise that might precipitate a much wider and much graver situation with Iran. Keep an eye on that story in regard to these British sailors and Marines, 15 of them from the HMS Cornwall, allegedly being held by Iran for purposes yet to be determined. Gary, back to our conversation, talking about this whole business of the USS Liberty. Clearly, there is no credible way that Israel can claim that the vessel that they were attacking was an Egyptian vessel rather than the American USS Liberty, because the obvious physical discrepancies between the two ships are clear even to a layperson who examines these photographs. You were also making reference to the fact that apparently Israel that morning engaged in a fairly lengthy initial aerial surveillance before the attack began. Now, did the attack happen in two stages? It sounds like there was an aerial attack later followed by a torpedo attack. Is that correct?
The original attack started with the Israeli Air Force attacking us with, still to this day, I don't think we actually know the total number of planes that attacked us. Some have said it was only three planes, but I don't think three planes would have been carrying that much ordnance, as much damage as they done to us. This attack lasts probably close to 30 minutes. It wasn't a 1 or 2 or 5 minute affair, as our government has said on a number of occasions, trying to play down the severity of this attack. Now, after it was over, most of the fires topside had been put out, and I repeat this from accounts from my fellow crewmen that I've talked to at length about this, men that were in firefighting parties, damage control, that were above decks, because I was below decks most all of the time. You know, Israel says, hey, we couldn't see an American flag flying. There was so much smoke coming from the ship, which that is just so much BS, because I want to point something out that I've been mentioning for the last 3 or 4 years. There was a slight headwind that morning, and of course we were trying to flee the area. We were getting the hell shot out of us, to say the least. Our old ship, we were doing about 17 or 18 knots into a headwind, so we'd had about a 20-mile breeze over the bridge, and our flag was 125 feet from the waterline to the top of our mast, and that flag was just almost at the very top of the mast is where it flew. Had plenty of air under it for lift. I mean, there's no way that that flag would not have been seen. I've heard the story so many times about that, you know, we didn't have a flag. You couldn't see a flag. When in fact, as I mentioned a while ago, we actually had three flags that flew that day. After we got back to Valletta, Malta, we limped back there across 1,200 miles of ocean. We were escorted by a fleet tug called the Papago to make safe harbor and go into dry docks there, which I've always found that strange. When we were only a few hundred miles from the Isle of Crete, which had sufficient dry dock facilities to have taken us, why did we limp so far for so long with a 22 by 39 foot hole in our side? But the official direct hit count that day is 821 direct hits on that ship. When I say direct hits, I'm talking about hits that made indentations in the bulkheads and the decks, or either they made penetrations. plus a 22 by 39 foot torpedo hole, which is the equivalent of three stories. Now, when we got back to Valletta, Malta, there was 5 2-man teams, and I was on one of those teams that counted these marks on the ship from stem to stern of that ship. Now, that didn't, the 821 number I just gave you does not take into account the thousands of strafing rounds that hit the ship. We were told not to worry about trying to count them. They were just too many. That was not, you just couldn't have counted that many hits. So, I mean, some say, well, the torpedo boats, as soon as they realized we were, it was an American ship, they stopped firing. Well, that again is not the truth. The skipper, after the torpedo had hit us, said stand by to abandon ship. I had blown up my life jacket in the fire room, and I just, at that point, was sheer terror. The thought of having to go over the side when these people were still shooting at us. These MTBs came in close, the motor torpedo boats, and they continued to fire on us. You can look at the pictures of the ship, and you look at the starboard side of midships directly out from the engineering area. They were firing armor-piercing rounds through the side of our ship. We must have had 100 or so pegs that were placed in the wall down there to keep the water from coming through the side of the ship. They didn't stop at that point. One of our officers, Lloyd Painter, it was his job to get the wounded up to get in the life rafts. They launch the life rafts over the side. Well, what the hell does Israel do? They shoot up the life rafts. There were only three of them that was any good. The rest of them had been burnt up and destroyed. And they shoot, well, they shoot two of them up, and they took fished one out of the water. Now, they deny that they did this, but we've got sworn affidavits and statements from crewmen that watched them. That, in and of itself, in accordance with the 1949 Geneva Accords, is a war crime. But evidently war crimes don't apply to Israel.
Yeah, quite clearly so. And to me, as I look at Eric Margolis's account of this from May of 2001, which is apparently rooted in some of the eyewitness accounts that were procured from people like you, Gary, one of the things that I zero in on this morning is that Margolis indicates that these 8 Israeli recon flights that initially flew over the USS Liberty, and of course Margolis makes reference to the very large American flag that was flying that day, which you've given us more qualitative data on this morning, that recon situation on the part of these 8 Israeli recon flights occurred at 0800 hours, 8 o'clock in the morning.
Correct.
Apparently, at least according to Margolis's account, the aerial assault on the part of Israel's Mr. A and Mirage 3 fighter bombers began at 1400 hours, or 2 p.m. civilian time. So there you have, 6 hours between the recon flights and the aerial attack. One presumes that in that six-hour period of time, that Israel would have had plenty of time to gather the data from these recon flights and to be absolutely sure of who and what it was that they were attacking in that six-hour period.
Well, you know, as I said a while ago, at 10:55 a.m. Tel Aviv time, through the publication Jane's Fighting Ships, which is a British publication, they had identified us as the USS Liberty.
Yes.
An American intelligence ship. Now, of course, they say, oh, well, it was moved off their war room charts, and it was a change of command, and it was a grievous accident. The only thing about it, our story, the crews, has stayed the same all these years, and their story changes like the wind. Every time we have come up with another piece of this puzzle, trying to get to present it to the American people, and now to try and get our war crimes that report that we filed with our government investigated. You know, it doesn't matter, it seems like, what we do or what we come up with. It's never enough. I mean, there's no way that these people didn't know who we were. Some of the recon planes, I did not personally observe them because I was in the fire room area working. Now, I remember hearing a captain come on the ship's 1MC, the public address system, requesting the duty photographic team lay to the bridge to photograph these planes. We have photographs of them that these planes were with. Some of the like the flying boxcar type plane was no more than 200 feet off the deck. You know, I mean, some of the guys said they could see the pilot, waved at the pilot, and the pilot waved back at them. So, I mean, this was a clear, bright, sunshiny day, unlimited visibility. There's no way that they didn't know who we were.
And with absolute proof from the Jane's fighting ships data, that from 0800, when the recon flights began by Israel on this clear day, recon flights that, as you now recount for us, involved some aircraft on the part of Israel that were within 200 feet of your deck, that between 8 o'clock in the morning and, say, 10:55 that morning, where you have this proof that Israel had positively identified the Liberty as an American vessel, that is just about a three-hour period of time there.
Right, correct.
And then from, say, 10:55 in the morning, we'll round it off to 1,100 hours. From 1,100 hours to 1,400 hours, they had a three-hour window of time where they definitively knew who and what you were. And so there can be no doubt that between 0800 and 10:55, they had definitively pegged you as an American vessel. And then in the 3 hours that followed, you know, whatever they were doing with that data, one can presume that this was a situation where they were using the additional 3 hours before the aerial attack simply to maybe finalize their pilots' target portfolios.
Well, that's one of the things that our research officer can talk about better than I can, but I'm going to address it since you bring this up. The Liberty had six transmitting towers. Five of the transmitting towers were up and running that morning. One of the towers was down for some mechanical reason. If something needed to be done to it. Early on in this attack, as Dave Lewis has said, if this was an accident, it was the best planned accident he had ever heard of. Five of these towers that were up and online were taken out. They were hit by heat-seeking missiles. And, I mean, our window to the world, our communications door had been closed. Some of his guys, some of the ETs, the electronic technicians, as he called it, run coaxial or long wire to one of these towers, to the tower that had been offline, and they did manage to get back up online, but there was jamming of these naval frequencies. Now, when the planes fired their missiles, as I understand it, they lost their jamming ability. And during this lull is when we got the word out to the 6th Fleet that we were under attack. And a radio operator on the America, he wanted our authorization, our authentication code, which was Rockstar. That was our call name. And the guy, he used some expletives and told him, listen to this, USOB. And they realized this was not a bogus or a phony call. And at this point, they prepared to launch aircraft, in which they did very shortly thereafter. Captain Joe Tully of the Saratoga got planes in the air coming to us. These planes had not gone much over the horizon. They notified the Pentagon by the HICOM network, I believe it's called, the communications link, that an American ship was under attack. They had launched aircraft. Immediately, word came back from Robert McNamara to get the planes back on the ship, and the Captain Tully and them recalled the planes. Admiral Larry Geis, who is now deceased, who was Squadron 60 commander on the America, they relaunched planes, re-notified the Pentagon that they had relaunched planes to our aid. Now, understand something. During this time, while this was happening, the motor torpedo boats had not gotten to us. We had not been hit by the torpedo. Geis challenged McNamara's order to recall the planes because we had an American ship, a Navy ship, under attack, pleading for help. McNamara, when guys challenged the order, there was a phone hookup from the Pentagon to the White House, and Lyndon Johnson came on the line and told his statement that he made was, get the planes back on the carrier. I'm not going to embarrass an ally. Now, there's a problem with that. How in the hell did he know who was attacking us? We didn't know who was attacking us. But I'm not going to embarrass an ally.
Boy, that is
now,
trouble.
This is something I would love. I'd love for you to interview Dave Lewis, and he talked to you about this because he was the man that talked to Admiral Geis. Dave Lewis was medevaced over from the Liberty to the America for medical treatment here, and most of the other injured. And he met with Geis, and Geis told him, he said, I've got to tell this to somebody because I know what has happened is going to be covered up, which it was, and it's
absolutely
still covered up.
We'll be back with Gary Brummett. There we have qualitative evidence that Robert McNamara and Lyndon Johnson not only prevented these planes from coming to the rescue of the USS Liberty, they knew who and what it was that was attacking the USS Liberty. We'll be back.
Imagine a firefly, simple and innocent, the ability to light the night sky. The ozone layer, unseen by the naked eye, life-sustaining. Our ocean, primordial soup, breathes life. Bring the wonders of nature home.
Sole Saltlands, handcrafted from million-year-old crystal salt, will gently ionize and purify your indoor air, helping you breathe easier. Nourish your mind and body with soothing colors for deep relaxation and neutralize EMF radiation, protecting your family's health.
Visit SOLAYWellness.com for powerful, simple, life-sustaining Sole Wellness products created from nature in harmony with nature.
Hi, I'm Isabella, founder of Sole Wellness. Visit us or call 866-497-0274, 866-497-0274.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency, and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Up to my
This is Mark Hancock, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Gary Brummett. Gary is a survivor of Israel's attack on the USS Liberty on June the 8th, 1967. And I wanted to warn Gary, as well as our listeners, that this is traditionally the part of the show where in the next few minutes we have a series of very frequent commercial interruptions. And then there will be a time for a more extended period of conversation again. But Gary, I wanted to say, looking at Margolis's article, you know, he mentions that it was known that the USS Liberty, it's now known, I should say, that as a World War II freighter, it had been converted into an intelligence vessel by the top secret U.S. National Security Agency, which, of course, we know is based in Fort Meade, Maryland. It was packed at the time with the latest signals and electronic interception equipment. The ships bristled with antennas and electronic ears, including a TRISCOM, a system that delivered real-time intercepts to Washington by bouncing a stream of microwaves off the moon. Margolis goes on to say that Liberty had been rushed to Sinai to monitor communications of the belligerents in the Third Arab-Israeli War. Now, interestingly enough, what he doesn't say, which you have provided for us in the way of additional information this morning, is that you guys left the Ivory Coast on approximately the 23rd of May. You were moving at flank speed to get to Rota, Spain by the 1st of June. And then after being logistically resupplied in Rota, you directly took off for the post that you ended up occupying in the Eastern Mediterranean at the time of the attack. The point being that one of the things that Margolis doesn't mention is that the departure from Ivory Coast on the 23rd of May, the sudden departure from Rota, Spain on approximately the 1st of June, suggests that particularly given the fact that we now know that the Liberty was being had been converted into an intelligence vessel by the NSA, that some very significant people in Washington at the highest levels of our government had to have known as early as the 23rd of May, certainly as early as the 1st of June, that this war was going to happen.
Well, that's kind of our thoughts. Now, there was an operational plan in effect at that time. We don't know the absolute total, what it meant, but the plan, the operational plan, was Frontlet 615, as it's been called. We've often wondered, 615, could that be 6 for the month of June, 15 for the day that would be the start of that war or not? We don't know if it is. That's open to speculation. But I do know that prior to this war, supposedly Johnson told the Israelis he didn't want them attacking one thing or the other. That's the public story that we've been told. But now, prior to the surprise attack by Israel on the morning of June 5th, Egypt had started withdrawing its troops. They had ratcheted up to kind of a war footing against Israel, but they had started removing their troops back out of the Sinai and were ratcheting down from a war-type stance like we
Gary,
all...
Gary, I want you to hold that thought right there with this Egyptian withdrawal prior to the 5th, and we'll take it up at that point when we come back. This is Mark Dancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back with Gary Brummett, survivor of Israel's attack on the USS Liberty on June the 8th, 1967. Stay tuned.